Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's been a damaging few weeks for Prince Charles, the future king of the United Kingdom.
The real question is, what on earth is the Prince's Foundation doing? What is Charles doing? How have they become embroiled in anything like this?
His team have been accused of accepting cash from foreign donors in exchange for access, honours, and securing their futures in Britain.
Prince Charles's right-hand man, Michael Fawcett, embroiled in yet another scandal.
Damaging claims about donations to his charity and potential promises to help secure honours.
While they say that the Prince and Mr. Fawcett are not friends, there's no denying that this is a man that the Prince trusted.
And now he's been plunged into another scandal involving, well, a classic cast list, actually, a Russian banker, a group of royal fixers, and a £500,000 donation that went missing.
We have the Charity Commission, which covers England and Wales. We have the Prince's Foundation, all investigating what has gone on over here. And it really stinks.
You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Callum MacDonald, sitting in for Manveen Rana. Today, cash for access, the Prince and the oligarch. Over the past few weeks, the Sunday Times has been investigating the practice of paid intermediaries taking money from foreign individuals in exchange for honours and access to the royals. Now, it might seem a bit strange, actually, that the future king, who is paid by the public, is in such dire straits as to need so much donated money. What on earth is he spending it on?
One of the things which has occupied Prince Charles has been Dumfries House, which is a Palladian 18th century manor in Ayrshire, Scotland, which the prince famously saved from private ownership by loaning a consortium £20 million or so to buy it.
Gabriel Polgrind is the Whitehall correspondent for the Sunday Times.
It's this beautiful royal residence with priceless Chippendale furniture. Charles has looked to various individuals from abroad in particular to bankroll its conservation and restoration.
So I just felt that it would have been a tragedy of immense proportions if the whole thing had just been split up and we would have been left with an empty shell of a house. And I know it would have just become a ruin.
There's lots of kind of actors and parties involved in this, but there are basically kind of three key circles on the Venn diagram. There are, you know, wealthy foreign donors who want to establish themselves in Britain, who want to take a bath in the warm waters of the establishment and the royal family. There are individuals in the middle who court clientele from abroad with the aforementioned goals and who enjoy access to the royals or people in their orbit. And then you have the royals themselves and individuals who advise Charles or work at his charities. I think we, in fact, as part of one of our pieces, spoke to a royal source who said the prince's intentions are good, but this is all money for the vanity projects. Has nobody said to him, you are just years away from being king. What the fuck are you doing?
Could you describe what Dumfries House is used for when it comes to private trips for potential wealthy donors?
Well, these wealthy donors are invited to spend time with Prince Charles at Dumfries House. They are told that they need to arrive at Prestwick or Glasgow airports, where they'll be collected by a chauffeur. The driver will take them to the grounds, whereupon they'll be welcomed by Prince Charles himself or his representatives. There'll be a dinner, you know, perhaps cocktails at the start. Charles's favourite drink is G&T. According to one person who's been to a number of them who I spoke to, the way it works is if you haven't donated to Charles yet, you get to sit very close to him. Only once your future benevolence has been assured, you then sort of gradually ease towards the periphery of the table, but you know, you very much get FaceTime with the future king. Pictures are strictly prohibited, or rather individuals are not allowed to themselves take selfies or iPhone snaps, but you do and indeed are encouraged to pose for pictures with Charles, and you can then buy the photos back in due course. If you are a kind of Russian oligarch, a Saudi tycoon, or whoever else, you need to find a way into the royal world. You can't go through the front door. There's no contact us bit of the Prince's Foundation, which provides you with a hotline to the future king. You need to do it with the help of somebody who knows what they're doing and kind of navigate the idiosyncrasies and eccentricities of the royal households.
Now is a good time to get to know the full cast of characters in this twisty tale, starting with
a man called William Bortrick, who is the charismatic Ulsterman who owns the publication Burke's Peerage.
I'm not a subscriber, Gabriel. You're going to have to tell us a bit more.
William Bortrick is the owner of this 185-year-old publication, which chronicles the genealogy of the British aristocracy. So its job is essentially to make family trees and research information pertaining to the earls, barons, and dukes that make up the British hereditary system. And, you know, on the face of it, that's all that Bortrick does. But what Bortrick has also done is, because he obviously enjoys his access to the aristocracy and in turn the institution at its apex, the royal family, he has also served as a kind of fixer connecting individuals to members of the royal family.
So we've got Prince Charles, we've got William Bortrick, we've got Dumfries House. I think at this point we should introduce Michael Fawcett, whose name is going to come up throughout this conversation as well. Tell us about Michael Fawcett quickly and we'll get more detail on him as we go through, but who is he?
I don't think there's a better way of introducing this conversation than by quoting the headline of the piece we had a few weeks ago, which described Fawcett as Charles's toothpaste squeezer in chief. I think a couple of decades ago, Charles had a shoulder injury, and it was during that time that this man called Michael Fawcett, not Charles's wife or anybody else, but rather Michael Fawcett, was entrusted with squeezing the Colgate or whatever a brand it was onto Charles's toothbrush. That, I think, illustrates the emotional proximity between Charles and this individual. I don't think anybody quite knows what the source of his worth is to Charles precisely, but what he has done for a long time is do some of the most kind of sensitive fundraising work and basically do a lot of the things that would be unedifying for Charles to be associated with, but which need to be done or are perceived to be necessary. He is sort of this presence which looms large over the royal establishment in particular, and he is at the center of this because when Bortrick offers access to individuals who will come onto with the royals, it is Fawcett that is often the man brokering it.
Understood. Okay, so the scene is set. We can all picture ourselves sat by the fireside at Dumfries House. Prince Charles is swirling a gin and tonic on the sofa, maybe a couple of seats away from us because we donated a while ago, and that's fine. We're hearing conversation about the Prince's Foundation. That's all good. And we've had our phone call with William Bortrick already. That's all organised. Fawcett's loitering in the corner, just making sure everything's okay. Then enter Dimitri Laius.
That's right. So Dimitri Laius is a Turkmenistan-born Russian and Cypriot banker who has been in and around the United Kingdom for the last decade. He described himself as an established businessman and philanthropist. And since 2014, at least, he has been trying to secure long-term residency and citizenship in the UK. The unfortunate fact for Laius is that he has a money laundering conviction, or rather was convicted for money laundering in Russia in 2004. Now, his representatives are keen to emphasize that his conviction was later overturned.
And in their words, expunged. And he has insisted it was politically motivated. But nevertheless, that particular detail on his CV has, unfortunately, proven to be rather awkward for Leas. He then increased his efforts to establish a foundation for his future in Britain by setting his sights on the definitive symbol of the British establishment, the royal family. It's in this context that he was introduced to William Portrick. The Sunday Times investigation team was able to uncover a series of emails between the parties.
What the emails we've been leaked makes clear is the transactional nature of this arrangement. So it was that in May 2020 that Leas did donate the first installment of what was ultimately £500,000 in donations. Days later, he gets a letter from Charles himself thanking him for his very generous support. Charles, in fact, underlined the word very, said that his money would go towards critical initiatives at Dumfries House, and said, and herein lies the key sentence, "I very much look forward to seeing you when this dreadful crisis passes."
So at this point then, let's consider Prince Charles's position that you just kind of touched upon. At the point where he says, you know, look forward to seeing you, do we know more about the context of that? Is that just something that Prince Charles says? Is that something that he says with all the information that we now have about Dmitry Leas? Or is that something that he says actually from quite a distance from knowing that much about the person that he's writing to?
You have to sort of make your own judgment about these things. I mean, you know, one could turn around and say the Prince Charles writes letters all the time. He probably sends out hundreds of Christmas cards as well. You know, just because he happened to sign something, it doesn't hold any force or weight or significance. But I think our argument would be that it's not so straightforward. And I would just also outline that Charles was no stranger. Of course, he's no stranger to Fawcett, but he was no stranger to Portrick either. In fact, the issue that has prompted Fawcett's resignation is the fact that he's been caught at the heart of this cash for honours scandal where, you know, Fawcett was involved in helping a Saudi donor to royal causes, a man called Mahfouz bin Mahfouz, secure an CBE.
One of the prince's charities is Happy and Willing to support an application for citizenship. The recipient of this letter, a Saudi billionaire who donated tens of thousands of pounds to organisations linked to the prince.
Well, you know, Portrick, who represented Mahfouz, met Charles on a number of occasions in relation to that process.
So that's Prince Charles at this point. So Leas has given money. He's got this letter back from Charles. Meanwhile, what happens to the money? It didn't go directly to the prince's foundation. Where did it actually go? What happened?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because you clearly therefore know that it gets a little complicated. So the sort of first step in this process is that Leas donates a six-figure sum, £200,000, to, well, not the Prince's Foundation. Rather, he transfers it to a UK-registered charity called the Mahfouz Foundation. Now, I mentioned a few moments ago that Fawcett had resigned over his help getting an honour for a man called Mahfouz bin Mahfouz. The Mahfouz Foundation is bin Mahfouz's UK charity responsible for sending his money to royal causes, among others. Mahfouz spends most of his time in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. Portrick has for years been his representative in the UK, managing many of his interests here. He is not technically a trustee of the Mahfouz Foundation, but he, I understand, and I don't think he's particularly disputed this, retains de facto control over the organisation, the charitable goals of Mahfouz bin Mahfouz himself, because Leas was told to give his money to this foundation. So the money goes to the Mahfouz Foundation. At that point, large chunks of money are held back for various fixes. Portrick has acknowledged he intended to take thousands of pounds in what he characterised as expenses for overseeing the visit for Leas to Charles. A lot of cash does not end up with the Prince's Foundation, but at some point, we think around £100,000 is sent on to the Prince's Foundation, prompting Charles's letter of thanks days later.
And I ask that to propel us into this sort of next section of the conversation, which basically, in summary, is about Leas and the total amount of money that he ends up giving, or that he suggests he is willing to give in order to secure one of our fireside chats with Prince Charles, but also his causes of anger that these meetings haven't actually happened. So there's money moving and swirling around, and he's still not got the access that he's after. How much money's changed hands? Where's he up to with his meetings between Lais and Charles and the cancellations that were rife?
So there were at least two meetings that it appears were actually organised. Both occasions were cancelled, and Lais, by the summer, is getting frustrated. He, in September, transferred £300,000 to the Mahfouz Foundation, all of which he expected to be donated to the charity. In fact, following the cancellation of the second proposed meeting, one of Lais's representatives emailed Bortric to inform him that she had just had to spend 4 hours calming him down over dinner. Such was his infuriation and agitation that having donated such voluminous sums of cash, this meeting, which had been promised in the spring, was no closer to happening than it had been on the day that Charles had said he looked forward to seeing him in due course. Now, I think part of why the meeting hadn't happened is COVID, but the significant part of it too is the fact that it seems over the course of last summer, one of the trustees of Prince's Foundation discovered on Google information about Lais's past, in particular the money laundering conviction in 2004. And it was then that they started to raise concerns about the interaction between Michael Fawcett, the chief executive of the Prince's Foundation, and Lais, who, notwithstanding the fact that the conviction had been overturned, had various details in his CV, question marks over his track record, that this trustee felt meant that the thing should be put on ice.
It was time for Lais to meet the aide closest to Prince Charles himself, Michael Fawcett. And accompanied by William Bortric, a meeting was arranged in September at a private members' club.
Mercifully, this whole plan hit a snag at the time that the pandemic had slightly abated. And so this is not a Zoom meeting we're reporting on, but a real life event. It was held at the Oxford and Cambridge Club, which is a private members club in St. James's in central London. They met together at 3 p.m. On Friday, this 18th of September. Fawcett, that is his deputy, a man called Chris Martin, William Bortric and Dimitri Lais. And my understanding is that the meeting was very amicable. Bortric, you know, in terms of how the meeting looked and felt, was very much the man kind of holding the room, kind of explaining who Lais was and what he wanted, whilst also seeking to convey some of the concerns and priorities of the Prince's Foundation. Fawcett and Martin, you know, basically were saying, we want your money. We'd love to build a relationship between you and the prince, but there's a certain way of doing things, and you know, we would suggest that, or rather mandate that, you know, any future donations come through, you know, a charity which you've yourself incorporated within the United Kingdom. And Fawcett also advised him, you should really gold plate your own reputation in the meantime. That will certainly help in getting access to Charles. And it's there that Lais says, you know, he's still keen to meet the prince. He's even himself dangled a carrot of his own, the prospect of a 7-figure, never mind 6-figure donation.
Lais did everything they suggested, including setting up the Lais Family Foundation as the UK-based charity through which he could finally make his generous donations.
I'm here with the founder of the Lais Family Foundation. So Dimitri, tell me a little bit about how the Lais Family Foundation started.
All my life I tried to help vulnerable people. It's before Family Foundation was set up, and now.
Coming up, the fixers get cold feet. But first, a message from our friend George.
Hi, I'm George Abuffnot, the deputy editor of the Sunday Times Insights Investigations team. It's you, the listeners and subscribers, who enable the Insight team to investigate the government's response to the pandemic. Get to the heart of the stories that matter every day with The Times and The Sunday Times. If you subscribe today, you can enjoy 1 month free. Visit thetimes.co.uk/storiesofourtimes.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
To recap, just to sort of reposition ourselves, so we've had the meeting at the club, at the private members club, against the backdrop of an employee Googling Laius's name and getting concerned, really, about him and about his past. That sort of works its way through the various characters that we've mentioned, who in turn seem to sort of find a bit of a workaround for some of the money.
So the Matthews Foundation sits on a large amount of the money, and then £200,000 is transferred to another charity, an entirely unrelated organization called Children and the Arts. So Children and the Arts is a charity which, by the time this took place, was semi-defunct. It was a organization which gave to underprivileged children, supporting them doing arts and crafts and such like. Charles is a patron. So Laius thinks he's giving his money to restore the Palladian Chippendale interior and furniture of the Dumfries house. On the contrary, it has now been siphoned off through the Matthews Foundation, unbeknownst to him, to this arts charity, which is in the process of being wound up.
Perhaps we should clarify what wound up means in the context of where this money has gone into that organisation and what winding it up would mean for Laius's very generous donation.
Winding up is basically the process of dissolving the charity as an organisation. So that means you settle any obligations or debts you still have, you know, you pay any costs towards staff. But basically, you know, you go from having a charity that exists to having one which does not exist. We understand that the charity itself, Children in the Arts, had undertaken this negotiation with Fawcett on the basis of the belief that this donation which he was brokering came from the Matthews Foundation. In other words, Children in the Arts did not know that the actual donor was Laius himself.
So we have Laius, who doesn't know his money is being moved into a given organisation. And we have a given organisation which doesn't know that the money it's receiving has come from him.
And Laius actually remains in the dark about this for half a year. It's only in March of this year that it seems the Prince's Foundation decides that they owe Laius an explanation for what has happened to his money in the meantime. And it is then that Chris Martin, Fawcett's deputy at the Prince's Foundation, sends Laius' representatives two documents. One is a letter from Martin saying, "We know that you thought your money was going to the Dumfries house. We've actually decided, Dimitri, that your money should go where it is best needed and where the Prince needs the most support. And right now, that is Children in the Arts, which does all this wonderful work with disadvantaged children." And then he also attaches a letter from Children and the Arts, or at least purporting to be from Children and the Arts, in which they too state, "We are very grateful to you for this kind donation, and it will help the charity fulfill its educational programs for the disadvantaged attending schools in this country." So, you know, Laius essentially has been led down the garden path and is now being told, "Oh, well, this is where your money is." But that sort of complexity doesn't stop there, because when we showed this letter to Children and the Arts and told them, did they know that the money was coming from Laius? Children and the Arts turned around and said, "We did not send that letter." They say that the letter, which is addressed to "Dear Sirs," and which is merely from, it says, "Yours faithfully, Children and the Arts," all very ambiguous. They say, "We have never written a letter to Dear Sirs and from children in the arts in general on this day. It's not from us. They later clarify that they did write a letter thanking the Mahfouz Foundation, but it was addressed to the Mahfouz Foundation. So in the meantime, the copy of the document, which has made its way to Laos, has been altered, doctored, however you happen to want to characterize it.
I suppose it's worth considering then at this point the situation that Laos is in. What is he doing? You've mentioned before that he's kind of considering his options, I suppose, when it comes to legal action, for example. Do we have a sense of just how angry he actually is?
Well, I think pretty angry is the long and short of it. I mean, it's sort of a complicated but fascinating tale because he's simultaneously the man who suffered because of this past overturned conviction and who attracted all this scrutiny, all these doubts, was in fact blocked by trustees who did not think he was an appropriate person to be accepting money from. We've sort of focused on the fact that Charles wrote a letter to a guy who had not passed that level of vetting. And then he's also the victim. He is somebody who's given lots of money, not all of which has ended up where he was told it was going to go, and who has been, you know, deceived repeatedly over the course of this period. So how angry is he? I think, you know, we know that he's said he doesn't rule anything out.
Gabriel, we've kind of done a decent job here following the money, following Dimitri Laos, joining him in the Oxford and Cambridge Club, not joining him at Dumfries House at the time of recording. But more pertinently than that are questions about the repercussions for Prince Charles. Where are we at? What's being investigated? Who's being investigated?
We have the Office of the Scottish Charity Regulator. We have the Charity Commission, which covers England and Wales. We have the Prince's Foundation, all investigating what has gone on over here. And it really stinks. You have Charles offering to see somebody who had been promised, if you pay money, you get to see the King. You have Charles being found to have met Borchgrevink on at least 9 occasions. You have Fawcett resigning for the third time, albeit temporarily. And now he's at the centre of this riddle surrounding a fraudulent letter. This, in the round, is not the sort of thing which the future king should be getting involved with. I think that is a fairly uncontroversial statement. And another, can you imagine the Queen doing any of this? There's just no way that it is the sort of thing that the Queen would do. And it is there's no way it's the sort of thing that Charles should do. And Charles's operation has continued to insist that he is had no idea about the alleged offers of cash for access or cash for honours. But I think the fact that he has met Borchgrevink on all these occasions, wrote these letters, attended these fundraisers, and critically kept Fawcett in his inner sanctum tells you all you need to know.
And you mentioned the Queen, and it does immediately make me think of the royal family at large. It's definitely in a delicate state right now, isn't it? Prince Andrew's got a court summons, and that sort of shadow of that whole saga is hanging over them. Meghan and Harry, of course, started the year really challenging, I suppose, the royal family and its standing. And now we've got kind of Prince Charles caught up in this murky world of cash for access, cash for honours, potentially. I suppose, as a kind of zoomed out thought, Gabriel, from you, is how damaging is this for the reputation of the royal family, particularly, I suppose, at this point, for Prince Charles, who is waiting to assume the throne?
Well, I think, you know, you just eloquently outlined the fact that it's been a disastrous year, it's been a disastrous decade. I mean, one could even say it's been a disastrous 2 decades for the institution of the royal family. I mean, obviously, there's no shortage of interest in them, and that applies on both sides of the pond and indeed around the world. But it is dreadful. I mean, you know, Charles, as you say, is not a minor royal. He is the man who presumably reasonably soon will ascend to the throne at a time when public attitudes towards the monarchy are in flux and are pretty plastic. I think it was, again, Matthew Paris who said that most members of the British public are now not monarchists, but Elizabethists. We love the Queen. We are not so sure about the rest of them. And this sort of thing does not help the royal cause whatsoever. It is obviously the case that Prince Andrew is currently in the proverbial, not quite yet literal dock for offences that easily supersede anything Charles is accused of doing over here. But the fact that you have so many of the Queen's children and so many major royals are subsumed in these scandals is really serious for the reputation and standing of the institution. And it is for that reason Clarence House has been trying to shut these stories down for weeks. But, you know, in the end, Charles is so close to all of it that it's very difficult to distance him from it.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, a podcast brought to you thanks to the subscribers of The Times and The Sunday Times. Thank you. I'm Callum MacDonald, and my guest today was Whitehall correspondent for The Sunday Times, Gabriel Pogrand. You can read more of Gabriel's work at thetimes.co.uk, but only if you're a subscriber. And if you've just enjoyed this entire podcast, which to me it feels like you have, it's made by the brilliant team at The Times. So why not subscribe to the paper online as a little thank you? That'd be kind. Of course, you can pick up the paper in print as well. Do that on Sundays to get more of Gabriel's brilliant work. Do it every other day to get other people's brilliant work. The producer today was Josh and Channa. The executive producer was Asia Fuchs. And sound design was by David Crackles. If you have a story you feel that we should be covering, an idea for a future episode, or thoughts on what you've just heard, we are standing by to hear from you. Send us an email. The address you need is storiesofourtimes@thetimes.co.uk. And I will see you again soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.